B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
En masse.
You're going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, 4:03 in the afternoon, hour number three, Felger and Mazz, here presented by DraftKings on 98.5 The Sports Hub and simulcast across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston. The NHL, still not on the ice, which is kind of annoying, The NHL, apparently, is not going to let any team on the ice until they can all get on the ice. And believe it or not, the Bruins aren't the one holding it up anymore. I guess it's teams up in Canada. There's some teams up in Canada that can't get on the ice. And apparently they're not going to let anyone on the ice until everyone gets on the ice, which is
what
this whole thing bugs the crap out of me. It started bugging the crap out of me over a month ago. Never mind the fact now that there's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people mass gathering in streets across America anyway. And yet we can't get Chara and Bergeron onto the ice in Brighton to just do a little twirl. That's annoying. And I sincerely hope that they've got a key and they're sneaking in at night, or the Rustischa Center, or any of the other rinks across Boston. They've got keys, and they're in there just doing their own thing anyway, because is that illegal? Are they allowed to do that? Is the NHL saying you can't even get on skates?
Might make you feel a little bit better. I heard a certain something from someone that's friends with one of the more prominent players of the team that's kind of happening.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. And I would like to think that it is. You know, you don't have to publicize it. You don't got to tell me about it, but don't tell me with all the rinks we have across the city, and you can now get in them, finally, that they're not just getting in there and doing a little skating. Like, come on. But either way, they can't do these organized, you know, groups of six until they can all get in. But where are they going to go? Where should they go? That's still open for debate, Murray. You had a thought on that?
Yeah, I was thinking about it because there was a column posted on Yahoo Sports today about the pros and cons about all the cities that have been bandied about by the NHL. And I was thinking, like, I don't know, hopefully this will end, and yeah, we will see police reform and all that. But as of right now, it feels like nothing's going to stop in terms of the madness at night and the protests that turn into violent looting and so on and so forth. So say this continues on and on and on and on and on, God forbid. If you're the NHL, don't you now look at this and say, like, okay, well, this is also about getting cameramen into the building, and these games will be taking place at night, ostensibly, right? So if the cities are popping off and we're maybe worried about the violence spilling over to where we are and it's just madness, take this thing to Canada. We're out of here. You know, like, right now, it's as the world continues to get crazy, and this country is getting crazier by the minute, we're going to take this to Canada. If we're returning, we'll play in Toronto. We'll play in Vancouver. But we're not playing in any of the American cities. And if they did that, I wouldn't blame them.
So,
I mean, to me, it makes a lot of sense. I thought from the beginning, in all honesty, Canada was a better fit. I recognize.
And initially, not to cut you off, I thought the complete opposite, because Trudeau up there doesn't want them doing anything with all the lockdowns and the quarantines, and you can't come up here and don't cross the border. It's like, oh, F you, Canada. Now you should go to Canada.
That's a T-shirt. F you, Canada. Go ahead, Murray. I mean, Mass.
Well, so Murray, I didn't mean it necessarily politically. I meant just from a logistics standpoint. I feel like Canada's just less populated. I mean, there are what, like, you know, 75 million people or something in the whole country. They get all that space up there. Social distancing's built in. Rinks all over the place. Like, to me, it just felt like Canada was better. In terms of the virus, purely the virus, I'm not talking about getting across the border and then quarantining for 14 days and with the political, you know, I just felt Canada was better from the beginning. But I recognize that, you know, they probably want to play these games in the United States. The majority of teams are American teams.
Why, though? Why, Maz? I mean, just stop you. By far, reading up on it, the best sites are in Canada.
Well, so that, I felt that way from the beginning. I just got the sense that it was more of a TV thing to have it in the United States. I don't even know why.
Why?
I don't know. I don't have the answer for you.
I mean, if it's just a TV show, it's just a studio. Like, the studio can be anywhere. To me, just reading up on it, the two best sites By far, are Edmonton and Vancouver. By far. Edmonton has, do you know Edmonton has a practice rink right in the Rogers Center where the arena is? They have two rinks right there.
Really?
Two rinks in the same building. They have practice rinks all over the city. Edmonton's bid promised a separate practice rink for every team that came.
Wow.
Every team that came would have their own practice rink. in the Edmonton area, which the NHL actually said to them, we don't need, but thanks. But that was part of Edmonton's bid. But they have a practice rink attached to the Rogers Center. So there's two rinks under that one roof. There's a couple more right in the city, almost walkable from what I understand. They have a hotel that's attached to the Rogers Center, and they have two others that are less than a five-minute walk. They're two blocks away or a block away from the Rogers Center. Furthermore, and again, I know everyone gets concerned about this, so I think I'll bring it up to you.
Cooler temperatures.
They have the best ice in the league. Edmonton has the best ice in the league, and I'm not taking calls on this, but this is to scratch your itch because I know it's your first call. Edmonton has long had the best ice in the league.
Felga defined best ice.
They do. They had it at the old barn that they used to have, and this new rink is the same thing. Why? I'm reading a story straight from Sportsnet. It's dry and it's nice. A summer day. The highs in Edmonton in July and August are only in the 70s. They don't get much above 80.
But what's the humidity?
Okay, stop. That's it. That's all on the ice.
Yeah, they can open the luge.
Their COVID rates are way down. Compared to some North American cities, it's way down compared to what we are. So, and apparently there's been restaurants there that have become part of this bid. You know, make us part of your bubble. We'll put on special spreads, and they're all within. So there's a There's a little bubble right there next to the arena. There's two rinks in the arena.
So they're really rolling out the welcome mat.
It's a better setup.
There's practice space all over the place. And Vancouver doesn't quite have that, but it's close. They have tons of practice rinks. They've got another situation like that. And it's similar. The issue is, Trudeau, is they're still stuck on this 14-day quarantine business, which, to ask... 20 North American teams, U.S. teams, to now travel across the border and then sit there for 2 weeks with their Schmenzer in their hands is like, come on, for crying out loud. Like, can we get past that? If you test them and test them and test them, can we somehow narrow that 14-day quarantine thing? And so, like, those two Canadian cities are by far the best. If you want to talk about another great bubble environment is Vegas, because they can... again, tons of hotels, walkable to that arena, which is right off the strip, etc. The problem is, it's hot as balls.
Yeah, it's hot.
It's 110 degrees.
Bad ice.
I don't know what sort of practice facilities they have. Don't tell me Vegas has practice rinks all over the city like, Edmonton or Vancouver do. And it's sort of like, no, the places to go are Vancouver and Edmonton. That's where they should go. And they should send Edmonton to the Vancouver side. Is Vancouver in it? They must be. Everyone is. And Vancouver to Edmonton. So you don't have anyone staying at home. And you put the Eastern Conference in one place and the Western Conference in the other. That's where they should go. There is, outside of Trudeau and his 14-day quarantine, the other issue is there is a little bit of a time difference thing. So, you can't, you have to play all those games in the afternoon out there. Because you need the East Coast audience. You can't be having 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock Stanley Cup playoff games every single night out here.
So Edmonton 2 hours behind?
No, it's three.
Ooh.
I'm pretty sure it's three.
I think Edmonton's two, Vancouver's three.
Is that right? Okay.
I think so.
Yeah, Edmonton's mountain, so two.
All right, so either way. But, those games are going to have to go off early there. And, if they're playing 2-3 a day, maybe there's one that is a noon start or 11 a.m. start. That's something they got to think about. The time zone thing is, to me, the one impediment. But otherwise, that's where they should be.
Mike, Canada's a better setup. It's a better setup. And I said to you, 75 million people in the whole country. It's gigantic. It's half of that. It's 38 million people. You got so much room up there. I say this because of the social distancing aspect of it. It's, in theory, safer because you just have so much more space per capita than you do anywhere else. And then you add in the preponderance of rinks all over the place. Like, to me, it makes all the sense in the world. I felt, again, taking the 14-day quarantine and the politics out of it, Canada was the place to go from the very beginning.
Okay, so here are the 10 teams. This column in Yahoo broke down where all 10, and these are the 10 teams that Bettman gave us. So these are the 10 finalists. Chicago. Its location is convenient, and being a central time zone works for staggering start times for TV. They say the Blackhawks' two-sheet practice facility is near the United Center. Okay, so that's important. There's fine hotels and restaurants, plentiful downtown.
Well, do we still know that?
Well, but downtown, fine. But yeah. The south side of Chicago, where that rink is not exactly fine. That's not Well, anyway, so you're not walking to the arena. You know, this is something they want. They want to be able to walk to the arena from your hotel, so you're not getting in buses. You got a bus in Chicago.
Even then, like, again, if this is continuing and we're devolving and the cities are going, like, are you going to be able to get there?
Right.
Are they going to be gumming up traffic with protests? Like, who knows?
Or if they're going to be trying to tip over your bus,
right,
then you probably can't go there. They say Columbus, the Blue Jackets practice facility, is also connected to their arena. And nearby Ohio State has a top-notch rink. All right, so they've got the rinks there, and they're all within, you know, so maybe this is why Columbus has been a leader in the clubhouse for a while. However, finding large blocks of hotel rooms could be difficult. Curious, Columbus is a huge city. We're not talking about Jacksonville there, right? They couldn't have enough hotel rooms. Well, anyway, they say Dallas, also a central location, but the practice rinks aren't near downtown or the competition rink, the American Airlines Center. Edmonton, strong contender. If Canada eliminates its requirement that those entering the, as I just went over, they have to eliminate that self-isolating for 14 days, for crying out loud. But otherwise, Rogers Place, equipped for technology needs, has sufficient locker room space. I heard they had space for 12 teams at the Rogers Center. The community rink that's adjacent would provide practice ice that I was talking about, et cetera, et cetera. Las Vegas, they say the reopening of casinos and resorts is making loads of hotel rooms available. T-Mobile Arena hosted the Stanley Cup Final in 2018 and handles big events well. Though summer heat would test the refrigeration system. There's your ice element. Practice rinks are good, but 30 minutes away. 30 minutes away? Come on. L.A. is on the list, if you can believe it. Staples Center would be a natural site and is accustomed to hosting big events. It has three large team locker rooms, two smaller visitors' locker rooms, and star rooms for support personnel.
You can forget about downtown L.A. You ain't going there.
That's what I say, too. L.A.'s out, I think.
But how about that? Star rooms. They put in quotes. Like, they have... So, like, Jack Nicholson gets his own little locker room space down there in L.A. Timberlake gets to go down there and has his own little dressing room. How about that? Anyway,
good, as long as it keeps them off the golf course.
There are plenty of hotel rooms across the street at LA Live. The Kings practice facility in El Segundo has three ice sheets. Wow. All these other, the Bruins have that one measly sheet, right? It's like all these other teams have much better practice facilities, it sounds like. Anyway, that's in El Segundo, though. So that's a little bit of a ways. Minneapolis, the land of 10,000 lakes, has a lot of rinks, but lacks hotel space in St. Paul. And the Wilds practice rink, So that's where the practice rink is as well. Playing there would create a buzz among hockey savvy fans. Who gives a rat's ass?
Is there ice under the surface at the IKEA?
Pittsburgh, strong credentials, also experienced at handling big events and has many hotels within walking distance of PPG Arena. Practice rinks are about 30 minutes outside of town, which doesn't fit the NHL's aim of keeping things compact. Toronto, center of the hockey universe, gets big points for being Canadian media capital and having ample hotel space and practice options. And Vancouver, who I mentioned before. So, like, the Canadian cities make more sense, Mass. They just do.
I just think, again, to me it made sense from the beginning just based on the math of you know, the coronavirus and everything else, COVID-19 and the need for space and distance and all of that. Toronto surprises me. I haven't checked the virus numbers in Toronto specifically, at least of late, so I don't know what the outbreak has been there. One I just checked online quickly was Quebec, because I thought, you know, we don't think of Quebec just because there's no franchise there at the moment.
Oh, no, but they got a building there now.
Yeah, well, right. So, but apparently the virus outbreak there was significant. So, I think that some of the bigger cities I wonder about, like Toronto, just because of the population, suggests to me that you're going to have more of a COVID-19 problem.
All right, we'll pick this up with your calls right after these words.
It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz. Show the crowd goes wild for.
Boo!
It's Felger and Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Let's get some help with this, actually. Ty Anderson's our buddy, writes for 98.5thesportshub.com on everything, but mainly the Bruins. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Hi, Ty.
Hey, what's going on?
Where do you think the Bruins are headed?
I think that Las Vegas is almost locked in, I would say, just based on everything you hear, the sort of the complex, what they can do, the hotels, as you guys mentioned. And then I'm sticking with Columbus. I think Columbus is another one that makes sense just because of the fact they have Ohio State right there. And if you're going to have a true playoff format, I think that you can't have only two games a night per se. So you may need a second rink there, which is why Columbus makes sense.
So they play not just practice rink at Ohio State. They play at Ohio State's rink.
Well, I would just imagine that you really can't do four rounds and only have, you know, let's say two games a night. You can't do that. It would take 4 months to do that. So I think you need a second rink, and that's why I really think that Columbus makes the most sense. Edmonton would make sense. Like, they want it really badly, but Bettman has said that if they have that 14-day quarantine, they can't do it. They cannot wait for that. They need to be able to get in and out.
Ty, let me ask you something. How does Canada, which is, you know, again, their numbers have been better than ours, and that sport, you know, sports is important to all of us, but hockey to them is near religion. Like, right. How could they not pressure Trudeau or what would the, you know, the government there to make an exception for the hockey when they have a chance to host something like that?
So that's honestly, that's the big thing, and I think it's going to be the tipping point here. He's going to feel that pressure. He's feeling it from city officials in Edmonton. I'm sure Vancouver and Toronto, they're probably doing the same exact thing. And Cassie, when he was on with TNR last week, he kind of joked about that, saying you really can't be like that in Canada and expect to hang around. So that's going to test them, and it's going to test the city officials and sort of their willingness to push back. It would make sense. It's just, again, can they get past that 14-day quarantine? It's a must for the NHL.
I mean, Ty, look, not to, like, you know, I mean, I know you we have you here rather to talk about hockey, but don't you think that ultimately they would cave on that? That Trudeau would say, look, we'll work something out?
Yeah, I think he should, but at the same time, what's happening in Florida right now is a little, I don't want to say worrisome, but Florida just had their highest spike in coronavirus cases, and now they're going to welcome the MLS and the NBA down there. So does that give him ammunition to say, well, we'll look at Florida. We can't do that. We're going to risk that happening here. So I don't know. I just think that they're being ultra cautious. This is part of he's been pretty strong in that stance from the start. So I don't expect him to bend on it. I just think that if they present it economically, maybe that gets him to bend.
Where's the second Vegas rink?
It is in, I think it's called Summerlin. It's called City National Arena. It's a practice facility. It's about 20 minutes outside or 20 minutes away from T-Mobile Arena where the Vegas Golden Knights play. It has two rinks, I believe. I think there's two sheets there. So it's about 20 minutes outside. It's probably similar to how Rastush used to be for the Bruins, where you can get there in 20 minutes just all highway.
So you think it's Vegas and Columbus are your leaders, and do you think the Eastern teams go to Vegas and the Western teams go to Columbus?
That is my belief, because I think they want to erase the idea of any sort of favoritism. They've already said that even if they keep the Western teams in Vegas, which obviously the Golden Knights be part of that, they would have to stay at the hotel. They couldn't go home.
Yeah, sure.
So I think that, but I think just to avoid that, they may just say, okay, East you're going West, and West you're going East.
Okay, what else have you heard about details? Family members, et cetera, strict quarantine, loose bubble, tight bubble? Give me something.
I think the players want and need their families there. How that happens remains to be seen. That's sort of it's great they're going to negotiate about these 24 teams and how it's all going to work out, but I think this is going to be the biggest sticking point for a lot of these players. A lot of these guys that are older and have kids, they want their families there, you know, if they win the Stanley Cup. I just think that is going to be a massive sticking point, and that's something that remains to be seen how it's going to negotiate out. I do think that this is where it could get messy for them. You know, everyone wants to play, yeah, but who's going to be there? Do they have to stay in a hotel? How long are they going to be stuck in these buildings? Can they move around? You know, all those rules need to be negotiated out, and I think there's going to be some resistance from players because, again, nobody wants to be stuck inside for 3 months. The NHL has already been in phase one. Since March 13th, they don't want to be stuck inside again.
Since about 1998, it feels like. They're in phase one. Unbelievable. Go ahead, Maz. I'm sorry.
I know. It's going to happen this week, and it still hasn't.
Ty, I don't know that we've asked you this yet, but have you been able to get a grasp on how many of the Bruins players are still in the Boston area? In other words, did they stay here when this whole thing shut down? Did some of them leave the country? Can you get any assessment of where they are on that?
Yeah, so there's a few guys that went back home. I know Nordstrom went back to Sweden. Per Lindholm actually stayed here because his wife was really pregnant, I believe, so they really couldn't go back home to Sweden. Krug's in Michigan, Carlo's in Colorado, McAvoy's in New York. So some guys have gone home. Z just came back. Charge came back from Florida. He was down there throughout this process. So some guys have stayed locally. I know Tuukka stayed locally, Marchand. But a lot of the guys I think are staying within the United States if they can. Some have gone home, but I don't think that many of them went all the way back to Europe, for example, just because of the travel restrictions when it comes to coming back home.
Well, so the reason I ask you is because, if I'm not mistaken, you know, more than half the players in the league are from Canada, right? It's like 55%. And, I haven't examined the Bruins roster in depth, but guys like Bergeron, for example, and, Marchand, they stayed locally.
Yeah, both Bergeron and Marchand stayed in Boston, from what I've been able to gather. Both those guys stayed home, various reasons, I'm sure, but I think that the travel ban did play a factor, and they don't want. I think that when the league eventually moves to phase two, they don't want key pillar pieces of their organization not being in Boston.
Ty Anderson, 98.5, thesportshub.com. Join us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. We haven't spoken to you in a while. Do you like the format that the NHL chose to come back? Do you think it screws the Bruins?
It does not screw the Bruins, because if the Bruins are the Bruins and they go, let's just say, 2-1 in the round robin, which they should do, they will have a great chance of being the number one seed. This is making the best out of a terrible situation. So I'm okay with it. If it's either this or no hockey at all, or going right to the playoffs, I take this format over that.
Is the number one seed important?
No, there's no home ice. I mean, it factors in last change, sure. But keep in mind, last year the Bruins were a much better road playoff team than a home playoff team. I think when it comes to the home games, and this is a whole different discussion, but they chase the matchup a little bit too much. I think when they're on the road, they play their own style of hockey, and it works for them. So I don't think it matters, especially this year with no fans in the crowd.
Is it any? Does the format, you feel like, maybe benefit or bone someone more than the other, though?
I think it bones the Penguins and the Oilers, I think, more than it bones the Bruins. You know, these teams, I mean, if you're in a best of five with the Blackhawks or the Canadiens, I think there's more room for error than, okay, you're the Bruins and you can drop from 1-3. I think there's more for those teams to lose than the Boston Bruins, who are already in the 16-team field. But the Oilers and the Penguins, for example, I mean, those were legit playoff teams that may end up losing. Because, again, the Blackhawks, they have Patrick Kane and Taves. They have a little bit of mystique there. And then you look at the Canadiens. I don't fear them like you guys do. I don't know why you fear them, but crazier things have happened.
You know exactly why we fear them. You understand completely why we fear them, Ty.
Yeah, because you're mentally weak.
Is there anyone that you worry about coming back here, Ty? Because when I think about the Bruins, I think of them, and they sort of take the identity of Char and Bergeron on down. I think they are, for the most part, a diligent, hardworking, button-down group of players. And they've been that for a while, and there's only a few loose guys that I would worry about. But one of them is your leading scorer in Pastrnak. I'm curious what he looks like after 3-4 months, left to his own devices. I don't know if Rask is on that list or not, but let me ask you. Are there guys that you worry about coming back after this long layoff?
I do. I worry about mainly my guys I worry about are Kasha and Richie. They didn't have a long run with the Bruins. They didn't really find ideal fits, and that's your second line. So what happens if they don't find their footing and find a fit on this roster by the time it's game one? Now you're back to where you were last year. You're a one-line team, and that's a little scary to me. If that line gets shut down or doesn't produce or struggles out of the gate, what are you doing? So I worry about those guys, I worry a little bit about Rask in the sense that he has had some slow starts before. But my qualifier there is that when one guy's been bad, the other one's been really good. So maybe Halak is great out of the gate or vice versa. So I'd like to see how that plays out. But I worry about the deadline guys because they don't have a set home in this lineup.
Maz, why are you shaking your head?
Richie's going to be
fat. That seems like a lifetime ago. I forgot those guys were even on the team.
No, I was going to say, do you know who Kasha and Richie are when he mentions that? Because it's been so long.
I forgot. It's like he says, Kasha said, oh, that's right. They made a couple of deals. Like Richie, I remembered because he was huge. And he was, I thought out of shape and, borderline. Like I'm eager to see what I thought Ty was going to say I'm eager to see what he looks like because he could be gigantic for crying out loud. But Kasha, I was like, oh, right. They got him too. I forgot about that.
All right, Ty.
He's been working on the horse farm, so who knows what the hell that means. He's been on the horse farm back in Ontario.
All right, Ty, I don't know if you're watching on the simulcast. I got a picture of you up there that looks like you're nice and tight and cropped. That can't be you. You're probably a hairy little gnome right now, aren't you?
I haven't gotten a haircut. I haven't gotten a haircut since the world went on strike or whatever, and
me neither.
I shave like once every 2 weeks, so I look like hell.
Exactly. You got to let that flow go. But you were a hairy little gnome before the thing even began.
Seriously.
Yeah, thank you. Right. I appreciate you using your number one show to let everyone know I'm a hairy elf. That's
you great. Are.
That's my brand.
All right, hairy elf.
I prefer to think of you as furry.
Ty, thanks for taking the time.
Anytime, guys.
Okay, I promise. Your call's on everything right after Murray's update.
Never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Felger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
Maz.
The guy's psychotic.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Stop it.
All right, talked about a bunch of different stuff so far today. We still have to get to baseball. There's development on baseball that's not good. We'll get to that in a second. I do want to clear some of these calls off the board. Same, been waiting patiently. Been avoiding you. Because one of our topics today was the anthem protest and the kneeling, and I definitely don't want to hear from you on that, but I've been avoiding as long as I possibly can. So you've been on the board for that. We opened up with NBA return, NHL return on the board, even some caterwauling about the Redskins changing their name, using this opportunity to change that team name. All those things have been on the board, so your call's on all of it. Let's grab Patrick and Quincy. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, you guys are a bunch of radical, repulsive communists. Like, Matt, what are you talking about right now? You're saying, like, oh, yeah, I think this is a great country, but that's maybe because I'm white. Like, what are you talking about? Do you see immigrants for hundreds of years have been risking their lives just to get to the United States? Risking their lives. I don't see too many people risking their lives to leave the United States, black, white, or anything. It doesn't matter. And, Felger, what the heck are you talking about? Like, as an inanimate object? Like, obviously, they're protesting the military. Obviously, they're protesting our country. They could be protesting police brutality anywhere else.
What's wrong with protesting the country?
There's literally hundreds of places that they could be protesting.
What's wrong with protesting the country, Patrick? Do you see why I've been avoiding you? What's wrong with protesting the country? And they're clearly not protesting the military. They never have been. So call Howie. I'll get you his number. But this is what we've been trying to avoid. What annoying, breathless take does Jake in Boston have after 2 hours on hold? Go ahead, Jake.
Well, thank you. The Kraft statement was pretty disingenuous and a lot of pandering without action. Listen, I know you think I lean right, but if Bob Kraft wants to advocate for social justice, he's got to admit his wealth and white privilege allowed him to buy his way out of that Palm Beach situation. And two, if there's a second wave of COVID brought on by the fact that we've been locked down as a society for the last 3 months, and just magically one group was allowed to hold stadium-sized protests. Are you guys going to be happy? Because I won't be happy, and I know there's a silent majority that is going to be absolutely livid about that.
Okay, the silent majority. That was a good one for Nixon in 68. That's a good modern reference right there. See why I've been avoiding these people? Junior in Brockton. Yeah. Hi, Junior. Go ahead. You're up next.
How you guys doing?
Oh, we're good, Junior. We're good.
Listen, I support you guys. You guys been on this since day one. You guys been dead on about the whole nailing and everything. And listen, everybody has their own opinion. And by the way, I've been on hold for an hour and 20 minutes, so I got to let this out. And then Drew Brees, he has all the right. You can stand and just be supportive of what's going on and listen. And the day the Patriots all took a knee, right, the next day, the bars, everybody in the local area wanted to cancel them out and said, listen, we're not going to play no more Patriots game if they nail. You know what I mean? And then we have what happened.
Well, Junior, I'm just going to stop you there, okay? By the way, I'm anti-kneeling, but I can handle it if someone feels the need to do it, especially now when I see what they're driving at. Right. And I think we've all seen there's a reason behind what they're doing there.
There was no...
It's been a real cause from the beginning.
It's been a real cause from the beginning, but isn't this something of a reminder of what was behind it? It's not about the military, but I prefer they stand, but I'm not going to lose my mind. I'm going to cancel my... I'm not watching them again. I'm calling the advertisers. I'm not going to buy their product if they advertise on NFL games if I see them take a knee. I mean...
He just reminded me, too, and all of us, what a crock that was. Like, I'm not going to watch the league. Oh, their numbers were really affected. I'm not going to buy Nike stuff. Their stock went up.
It's a painful conversation because, frankly, you're painful. John in Maine, go ahead. Next.
Yeah, I'm a disabled veteran. I don't care if the sports people kneel, stand, or whatever. But the only thing that I find disrespect is when people stand or burn the flag, and that's it.
Sure, it's disrespectful. I'd prefer them not burn the flag. Are we really put out by it? I mean, does it really affect you other than you just find it offensive? But, I mean, does it affect anything about you? Anything about how you get on with your day? It doesn't. It doesn't one bit. And I understand you as a serviceman why you would be particularly offended. I understand that. The flag burning is a different issue. The kneeling, it's not about you. It never was. It's not going to be. It never was. It never was. And I feel some people just want to take it that way because they want to get all bent out of shape. Just another reason for you to get all bent out of shape about politics. Tommy and Lynn on the return of the NHL. Go ahead, Tommy.
Yes, I want to say this 24 playoff bracket and the Allen Robinson round. Does it have to pack the Bruins? Murray, I want to know your opinion on that. And also, Murray, where do you get your Scally caps at?
Okay, much better. A drunken Bruins call. I'll take those all day long.
The Allen Robinson round. It doesn't have very good hands. Kind of overrated. Injury prone.
Big lumbering round.
And most of my hats came from the JJ Hat Center in New York, which I would imagine no longer exists.
I need you to send me a link on that. I may start wearing some Scally caps. It's a good way to cover up the baldness.
Yeah.
I don't think it makes one lick of difference where that Bruins format. It really, unless they have to face Montreal, which then they will get porked in because they're choking pigs when it comes to that team. That's the only impact.
You won't let this go.
Only impact it's going to have. But otherwise, there is no appreciable impact. Coming up next, where Major League Baseball stands in their return, and apparently, it's not good. We'll give you the very latest, take some thoughts on that, and reset our NBA issues right after these words.
Boston's home for sports. Fill your ass. 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's not complaining.
Oh, you had a mean boss. Aw.
It's just Felger.
No, 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 no. It's always no.
Felger, Mass. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
So here's the latest on the MLB situation. Joel Sherman, longtime baseball writer, New York Post, has tweeted what today, Murray?
So he started with this. MLB has rejected the union's 114-game regular season proposal. They plan no counter. They're sitting on and essentially implementing a 48-54-game season of full prorated salaries, or 82-ish at less than prorated. Then he followed that with, I have heard greater pessimism today from folks on both sides about Major League Baseball launching a season than at any point. People who previously thought the sides would find a way, now expressing at least greater doubt, often more than that.
Maz, what do you think?
So I have felt, let me just back up here for a second. When this latest proposal came out and we started discussing it, one of the things we said was, well, you know, this feels like a path to get back to 82 games at prorated salaries. And I thought, no, that's where they were, and the owners didn't want that. So I think what the owners want here is as few regular season games as possible or zero. So, I think I said to you, I don't know, and I'm not trying to tell you I was right. I'm just trying to tell you that a week ago I started to worry that maybe the owners just want to kill this thing and fight. Maybe they want to initiate a crisis that the game, if you ask me, needs, and I'm really starting to believe that.
Yeah, right. So I don't know if you talked to anyone today, but do you believe Sherman that the sides are getting farther apart and it's looking worse, not better, by the day?
Yes. Yep. And so I think MLB is doing one of two things. Either they're trying to trigger this clause in this quote unquote agreement that they made back in March that would allow them to just create the schedule unilaterally, put it in place and go forward and pay players one third of their salaries in a 50 game schedule, or they're trying to kill the season. It's one or the other.
Okay, let's get some help with this. NBC Sports Boston's John Tomasi joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. John, what are you hearing?
So I've talked to a couple of executives this week, one today, and they are both kind of giving me the same refrain, which is we can't be that stupid in terms of not playing a season. But what's interesting to me is these are people who a week ago were saying we'll figure it out. Now there's definitely a little bit more panic when you talk to people in the game, and that concerns me because even today, I woke up today saying – I don't care what this proposal, 50 games, 114 games, 82 games, there is no way there is not going to be a baseball season. no disrespect, Tony, that is in nobody's best interest. I don't see how that can be good for baseball to start a fight that ends with the season being canceled. That's the kind of thing that you don't come back from it as the same sport that you were before. You have diminished interest, all of that stuff.
What if you don't want to come back at the same sport? What if you don't want to come back as the same sport, John? What if the whole idea is to change the sport and to change the game and, you know, make it a faster, better product coming back than it is right now?
I would ask you, is that what you really think this is about? That owners are, you know what, we need to increase the pace of play and canceling baseball in the midst of a pandemic when we risk losing fans forever. And I'm typically not alarmist about this kind of thing because I do think that people will come back, but I was always assuming there would be a season. If they really think that canceling this season will force the union to accept, you know, a better pace of play or fewer home runs or fewer strikeouts or whatever they think is going to change, I got news for them. It's not going to work.
Well, no, but what if it's a side benefit? What if they take that opportunity? This is what I'm thinking. They take the opportunity to make major changes to the game that they need. Never mind the finances among the owners. Like, I think it's a big one, too. I think it's a sport that's dying for a cap and a floor and more balance between payrolls from the first team to the 32nd, you know. I mean, these are bigger issues, but and not really at hand today. But I'm saying if they blow up the game, is there a chance they address all of it and it comes back an entirely different product when it comes back? That's what I'm hoping for if this blows up.
Yeah, I guess then you're trusting in the benevolence of the owners, which I don't. And it's like, is your goal to play a season or is your goal to crush the union? You know, and if your goal is to crush the union, then I would hope that fans would recognize which side is in the wrong here. They're both in the wrong to a degree. We agree on that. But which side is truly in the wrong? I look at it. Well, go ahead.
Well, I mean, just I was going to ask you, I'd pick a side. Who do you blame more?
Oh, the owners. I mean, look, the owners are the side proposing fewer games, not more. The owners are the ones talking about canceling the season, how there's a handful of them that would be happy to cancel the season. The owners are the ones refusing to open their books. The owners are the ones, you know, lowballing their minor league players who are making nothing. And I guess I look at it this way. You guys say cancel the season and a new greater baseball can rise from the ashes. I say if you're the owners, you should be looking at whatever losses you take this year as a worthwhile cost, as an investment in the sport's suddenly very tenuous future. Yes, you lose some money this year, but you don't lose your fans. You don't turn off a public that, let's face it, does not love baseball the way it did even 10 years ago, let alone 20 or 30 years ago. So I just look at it and say, if you're the owners, you should be willing to take a loss this year. You can absorb it. The players can't absorb losses. They don't make that money back. The owners can. And the fact that they are so short-sighted about right now, that's where I stand.
All right, John Tomasi, NBC Sports Boston. Where do you think the compromise comes, if it comes? What does it look like? You know, if they can hammer something out, what do you think it looks like? What's the sweet spot?
All right, to me, it has always looked like half a season, 80 games. The players get paid for the 80 games, and they defer money. They defer money out 1 year, 3 years, 5 years. They give everybody the Bobby Bonilla contract if you have to. And that allows the owners to save money now. It allows the players to make their money down the road. And the sport can happen. The problem is you have already missed your window of being welcomed back with open arms. It's to the point now where when it does come back, I really do believe that fans are just going to, especially with the NBA and NHL playoffs potentially overlapping and then the start of the NFL, there is a real chance that people say, you know what, as much as we miss sports and as much as, yes, we will turn the baseball game on, we are not going to feel that same warmth. We're not going to feel, you know, like that we want to be out at the ballpark again if they continue down this road.
John, do you believe that the product is flawed?
Oh, 1,000%. Like, Tony, I want to be clear. The union's messaging sucks, and Tony Clark is in over his head, and the union is completely obstructionist, you know, when it comes to improving the product on the field and the pace of play. I don't dispute that for a second. But to me, now is not the time to be fighting over that. To me, the future of the sport is at stake. You need to get back on the field.
Yeah, see, this is where I disagree with you. I think now's as good a time as any to pick that fight. Because, again, you're in the middle of a pandemic. You've already lost half the season. So at this stage, you say, what's the difference? We're not going to have fans in the stands anyway. We might as well flush the other half and pick the fight now. That's sort of my assessment of it. So I ask you, do you think the game is flawed? You say yes. Do you think the players believe the game is flawed?
No, and that's a humongous problem. I mean, I've had this argument with players over the years about pace of play, about how a pitcher should be able to hold the ball. One of the most ridiculous interviews I ever had was with David Ortiz after he retired, saying, you know, I don't understand why hitters can't just stand in the box. And I almost lost it. Like, wait a minute, you were the one who was more upset about this than anybody. Yeah, well, you know, once we had to do it, it wasn't that bad. Fine. And that's the honest to God truth. So I think, you know, players have their head in the sand. However, Tony, has anything about pace of play? This is about money right now. This is not about the good of the game, and I think you're being naive if you think
owners
for 1 second are thinking about that.
I know it's not, John. It's my dream. You know, and by the way, I want baseball back. So look, in Maz's poll, I voted I want it back, and I do want
Me
it
too.
Back. But if it's gone, I just hope they take an opportunity to address a lot of things that I think needs to be addressing. And maybe that's a pipe dream on my part. Maybe that, you know, not enough people in the game recognize the need for the change that I do. I'm just sort of hoping, I think that this sport, I think they do need to bring the union down a peg. I think they need to break that union a little bit to get some of the changes I need. So that's why I'm rooting for the owners. But it does go back to that. Matt, did you have one more quick thing?
Yeah, I just think you guys are delusional to think this isn't at least in some way, about the quality of the product on the field.
I haven't heard one owner say one thing about that.
Yeah, when that hasn't come up at all.
Because the union has a say in the CBA as to the quality of the product. And again, the popularity of the game is waning. Why? And so now, look, I'm not telling you that it's not about business. It is. But I'm telling you that when the business issues come up, you know what the owners are going to say? You know what the commissioner is going to say? Are you going to let me put the pitch clock in? Or do I have to go through an act of Congress to get it done? Can we speed up the process, or am I going to get David Price talking out his ass every time I bring up the fact that it takes him 40 seconds between pitches and we can't get people to watch the games like we used to? It's related. It is absolutely related. Now, I'm not telling you it's point number one right now with this year's revenues on the line. And I think the owners ultimately want to save the season, John, because the money's in the postseason. But I think they are pushing for as few regular season games as possible. And I do question if they want to do the 50-game season, whether the players will show up at all, and then they can pin it on the players.
Okay, so
that to me sounds like somebody who's not negotiating in good faith.
Okay, John Tomasi, NBC Sports Boston. Before I let you go, you got 1 second to play a little game with me?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Have you ever heard of Tommy Lestrella?
Tommy Lestrella. I have heard that name.
Tommy Lestrella. Who is Tommy Lestrella?
Tommy Lestrella. Wait, are we talking about like the Angels player or
yep.
somebody else?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Ding, ding, ding. He is an all-star second baseman for the Anaheim Angels, and you barely knew who I was talking about. You ready for another one?
Yeah.
John Means.
Oh, John Means, I do know. He was with the O's, right?
Yes, relief pitcher for the O's. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a little shaky, but I'm going to give it to you. One more.
He covers the sport.
I know,
Lestrella,
but this is my point.
You said Lestrella, so that threw me off.
No, you're right. I mispronounced it at first, so yeah. I'll give you a little bit on that. I'm just saying this because he covers the sport, Maz, and he is searching a little bit. Daniel Vogelbach.
Yeah, I know Daniel Vogelbach. The A's.
Oh, you're Googling it. No, Mariners.
We can hear the typing.
You're typing. You're Googling. You don't even know your own
Mariners,
all-star players.
God damn it. I did know him.
Exactly. Mariners. Okay, you proved my point. Thanks, John.
All-star.
See ya.
Exactly. See ya, John.
All-stars, and he wasn't even quite sure. He was. And Lestrella, he would have not quite sure. Not quite sure. Even the baseball guy can't identify current all-star players. Enough said on that. Here comes a update from Murray. 90 seconds, no commercials, I promise. To your calls, we'll reset the NBA thing as well.